It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Coming to you from Classic City,
the capital of the Bulldog Nation.
It's time for another edition of the podcast designed for the most die-hard Georgia fans in the country.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to another edition of the Glory UGA podcast brought to you by the great people at Alumni Hall. I am Tyler, and man, I've got an absolutely loaded show for you guys today as there was a ton going on in the world of Georgia athletics. And we're going to start off the top with some Georgia football talk. Yeah, it's the football offseason, if you want to call it that. I don't know if I really believe in the notion of a football offseason, the way that our fan base lives and breathes this thing, but there's no games being played, so I guess we call it the offseason. But over the weekend, we had 8 more Georgia players drafted in the 2024 NFL Draft, which if you put that together with the 3 preceding classes, that's 42 players drafted from the Georgia program over the last 4 drafts, which is by far the most of any program in college football. Alabama comes in second with 37, and Michigan coming in third at 35. Not only did we have 8 guys drafted in this class, but we had 2 drafted in the first round with Brock Bowers and Marius Mims, 3 in the top 34 of the draft. If you throw in Ladd McConkey with the second pick of the second round, we had 5 total taken in the first 2 rounds, 6 total taken in the first 3 rounds, 8 total overall. Now, Michigan was a talk of the draft. They did lead this year's draft with 13 players drafted. But if you paid attention over the past couple of weeks and months, Michigan fans were doing a little chest beating, saying that this was the year they were going to break the record that we set back in 2022 with 15 draft picks in a single NFL draft. 13 is really impressive. Great job, Michigan. Tip of the cap. But 13 is also not 15. Not a math guy, 15 greater than 13. So Georgia's 2022 class still stands as the single greatest draft class in NFL history from one single program. But beyond just the 15 versus 13, if you peel back the layers and look a little bit more closely at it, you see that it really wasn't altogether close. I know a Michigan fan would say, well, 13 is like, that's really close to 15. Okay, yeah, kind of, but let's look a little deeper here. So in that 2022 NFL draft, Georgia had 5 players taken in the first round. Michigan this year in 2024 had 1 single player, which was a quarterback. Quarterbacks get taken early. You saw the run on quarterbacks. J.J. McCarthy was a little bit of a reach, maybe, probably, but he got drafted there. Well, if you look at Georgia's 2022 class and you look at first and second round picks, we had 7 players total taken in the first 2 rounds. So almost half of the 15 players that got drafted from our program in 2022 were taken in the first 2 rounds. Michigan had 3, okay? 3 of their 13 were taken the first 2 rounds. They had 4 taken in the second round, or in the 7th round, I should say, including 3 of the last 9 picks. So a little bit inflated, maybe possibly. How many did Georgia have in the 7th round in 2022? A big fat 0. None. So we had not only more players drafted in 2022 than Michigan did this season, we actually had a higher quality of draft picks. We were getting guys drafted far higher than Michigan was. So great class by Michigan. Great job. Great season. National title. Don't take anything away from you there. Great job. But we can say great job and also still realize that Georgia's 2022 NFL draft class remains the single greatest draft class in the history of college football, I guess the NFL as well. Really, the only team I think can make an argument is 2020 LSU. They can make an argument. So they were the standard, right? They had 14 draft picks. I think it was 4 or 5 first-round draft picks in that class. That was the 2019 LSU team that was still, I say, one of the best college football teams that I've ever seen. I know I'm not an old guy. Getting older, go back, 20-ish years or so, watch this very closely. but I would say that's one of the best teams that I've seen. And they, you know, Joe Burrow got drafted number one in that class. They had 14. We had 15, but I think that is the one that would rival our 2022 class, not so much Michigan. I think that 2020 LSU class was fantastic. But anyway, back to Georgia's 2024 draft class. 8 draft picks. That's a really solid number by most other program standards. I mean, really, it's a very impressive number relative to the rest of the country. But I know how this sounds. It's just the truth right now, guys. For us, that's kind of a ho-hum draft, at least in recent years. I mean, we had 8 this year, we had 10 last year, 15 in 2022, and then 9 in 2021, which really kind of kicked off this 4-year run. But when you look at it, I know 8's really, really good. Really good relative to the rest of the country. But for Georgia, it's kind of like, shrug of the shoulders. So I think there's maybe 2 ways to look at this. I think the hater would want to say, I mean, Georgia's losing a step. Like, what's going on there in Athens? Or you can look at it a different way, which is the way that I tend to look at things. And I would argue that the 2024 Georgia draft class is just the calm before the 2025 draft class storm. Now, hear me out when I say that. To me, this 2024 draft class, only 8 players taken, that reinforces to me just how young the 2023 Georgia football team was. We were incredibly young last year, guys. And forgive me here. I'm going to look down at my notes here because I got some numbers for you. I want to make sure I read these accurately for you. I went back and counted these numbers, guys. Of 85 scholarship players that were on Georgia's 2023 football team last year, 48 of them, 57%, essentially 57%, were first or second year players in the program. 11 of those 48 started at least one game. They're all back this year. 14 played at least 100 snaps. 11 played at least 150 snaps. 8 played at least 200 snaps. 7 played at least 300 snaps. We also had the 8th most snaps played by freshmen in all of college football. Now, a lot of that was due to injuries, but hey, they played the snaps regardless. And I want you to think about how scary that is, guys. 57% of our scholarship players were first or second year players. 8th most snaps played by freshmen in all of college football. And we were, in the regular season, poll to poll, week 1 through week 13, the number one team in the country. Undefeated in the regular season. Yes, we fell short in the SEC title game against Alabama. That's on us. That's our fault. But think about how scary that is. How young we were last year. And also how injury-riddled we were last year. We got all those guys coming back. All those guys coming back. So what does that mean? What does that mean? Okay, well, that means we should be really good this year if you just take in the young players that weren't even draft eligible this year. But let's also throw in this. We had 10 third or fourth year players on last year's team that played at least 300 snaps that returned to the team this year that did not enter the 2024 NFL draft. So put all that together, the youth plus the returning veterans, you have the recipe for a 2024 Georgia football team that will be better than the 2023 Georgia football team that, again, went poll to poll in the regular season as the number one team in the country, which you could still make the argument. I know we did not win the national title last year. I know Michigan did, and hey, that's how things work. You know, the college football world, you lose a game, you're out. But I think you can at least, with a straight face, make the argument that the 2023 Georgia football team was the best team in the country, and 57% of our roster was, our scholarship roster, was freshmen and sophomores, first and second year guys. That is a scary thought if you are the rest of the college football world. I know Ohio State's going to be really good this year. And there's a bunch of teams that have talent. Texas is going to be really good this year. Alabama's still a really talented team. LSU has high hopes this year. Michigan, I guess they have high hopes, but probably not going to work out for them this year. But there are a lot of really talented teams out there. But how many of those top teams that are some of the betting favorites for the national title this year, how many of them can say that? That as good as we were last year, 57% of our roster, our scholarship players, were first or second year players. We have 10 third and fourth year players returning that played 300 more snaps, including, oh yeah, by the way, quarterback Carson Beck, who is the best returning quarterback in the country, might very well end up being the number one overall draft pick next year. Would have been a first round draft pick this year, hands down, the way they were drafting quarterbacks and the way they were reaching on quarterbacks. Of course, Carson Beck would have been drafted in the first round. That's a scary thought if you are the rest of the college football world. So I know that some of you might say, oh, man, it's a little bit of a down year for Georgia, which I think is also a little crazy. 8 draft picks for most programs is like a dream come true. For us, that's kind of where we've been as We've ascended the top of the college football mountain over the past couple years. So if you want to argue 2024 was a down year, I mean, I guess, kind of, if you look at the numbers over the past couple of years. But again, I believe that's the calm before the storm. I'm not worried about it at all. I believe that we are poised to potentially, and I would argue not even potentially, probably break our own draft record of 15 players drafted in a single draft back in 2022. I think we're poised to break it next year. And that might sound a little aggressive. Maybe you want to call me a homer. That's fine. You're on a Georgia podcast. These things get thrown at you. It's fine. Whatever. But I'm not going to say something about backing up. You guys have been with me for a long time. You know that. So let's look at the players that I guarantee you will be drafted off this 2024 Georgia football team in the 2025 draft. All right. Carson Beck might be the first overall pick. We've got to see, but certainly a first-round draft pick. Dom Lovett will be drafted. Robert Thomas, Colby Young, Trevor Etienne, Tate Ratledge, Smile Munden, Malachi Starks, Warren Brinson, Nazir Stackhouse, Mykel Williams. All those guys, I guarantee you, even if they're not draft eligible, they will declare for the draft and they will get drafted next year. Multiple guys in the first round. I mean, first round, Carson Beck, first round, Mykel Williams, first round, Malachi Starks, first round, Smile Munden, a chance to be in the first round. Wouldn't shock me if you see Smile Munden, if he has a big year coming back from injury. Wouldn't shock me to see him in the first round. Tate Ratledge, I mean, as a guard, not as much of a positional value as like a tackle, but wouldn't shock me. Colby Young, I don't know, first round, but he'll be drafted pretty high. Dom Lovett, same thing. So 11 guys, guaranteed, right off the top, okay? Well, I know, you know, again, I'm a math guy. 11, it's not 15. I get that. So we have to have some more if my prediction would come true. Well, let's look at another list down. These are guys, I can't guarantee these guys are going to enter the draft if they're underclassmen, but I think there's a good chance that they will. And I can't guarantee some of these names, guys that are going to be seniors that will exhaust their eligibility. I can't guarantee they'll get drafted, but I think there's also a really strong chance that they will. So let's read this list. Dylan Bell, Oscar Delp, Arian Smith, Ernest Green, Xavier Trust, Jalen Walker, Jared Wilson. And I know he's a first-year starter, but he's also going to his fourth year on campus. So if he has a big year, which, I mean, if you hear how Kirby raves about him, he very well might. He could go pro. So Jared Wilson, Dalen Everett, Julian Humphrey, Christian Miller. Obviously, he was in the news a lot this past week. And all right, this one, I know this isn't causing a little bit of an uproar. Chaz Chambliss? I'm not going to guarantee Chaz Chambliss will be drafted, but also I'm not going to count him out. Because this is a guy that has value. I know he's not a pass rushing guy, but he will play the run. He's tough. He's physical. He's a very, very hard worker. He will interview very well. The coaches will speak very highly of him. He was probably a sixth or seventh round guy if he gets drafted. I don't know if he gets drafted, but I don't think it's crazy to say he could possibly get drafted. But my point stands, though. 11 guys guaranteed to get drafted. I just read you a list of 11 more players that could get drafted. All of them probably won't, and all of them probably won't enter the draft. Like Dylan Bell, will he enter the draft? I don't know, maybe not, but he could. If he did, he would get drafted. If half of those, hell, if like five of them get drafted, five of those 11, that breaks record right there. That's 16. And I think more than five of those guys will get drafted. So again, I don't think it's even just possible that we will break our own record of 15 draft picks in a single draft next year. I think it's probable. I would predict that's going to happen. And again, how scary is that for the rest of the college football world, when you think about how good we were? I mean, if you want to say Michigan was the best team, that's fine. They won the title, so you give it to them, right? But on paper, you can at least make the argument Georgia was still the best team in the country last year, and we only had eight guys drafted off that team. We're going to have a lot more drafted in 2025. 57% of the roster were first and second year players. 2024 should be a very special year for the Georgia Bulldogs. Now, you got to get some balances. Luck's got to go your way. It's an incredibly difficult schedule. All of that factors in as well. But in terms of talent on the field, production-wise, I believe the 2024 Georgia football team will be better than its predecessor that we saw last year. And that was a hell of a football team in its own right. All right, guys, there is some Georgia football talk for you guys off the top. Before we move any further and get into some of the other sports on campus, let me remind you about our great friends at Alumni Hall. The Diamond Dogs have two huge series left at home. Two of the last three series will be at home. So if you haven't made it out to a game yet, you still got time. And when you head to Foley Field, you want to look the part. And there's no better place to go pick up the latest and best Georgia baseball gear than Alumni Hall. They have a ton of options, guys. They have every possible color of the Georgia baseball jerseys you're going to find anywhere. I love all of them. And yes, I am that guy who has them in every single color. Friday is usually my game to rock the black ones because obviously we play those games primarily at night, so you don't have the sun beating down on you when you're wearing black. That is a real thing. I go with red on Saturday, and on Sunday I will go with the home white. But you don't have to be a weirdo like me. Just pick up whatever color you want because they got all of them, guys. They have a ton of other options for you guys as well. And hey, you know, it's never too early to go ahead and get started getting your 2024 Georgia football game day gear set up. So stop at Alumni Hall, either here in Athens inside the Edge Bridge Shopping Center or online at alumnihall.com, because Alumni Hall is where the Bulldogs shop.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, guys, let's move on here and let's talk some Georgia baseball. I kind of buried the lead here, to be honest with you. I want to start with the NFL draft because obviously the Georgia fan base, we love all of our sports, but Georgia football drives the ships. I want to start there. But Georgia baseball probably deserved to lead off this show because we did what we had to do this week. Now, I know some of you might be saying, well, wait a minute, what are you talking about, dude? Didn't we just lose a series to A&M? Yes, we did. You are correct if that's what you're thinking. But I don't care. In the SEC, what you need to do in this league is win a game on the road. Do not get swept on the road and hold serve at home. So far, with the exception of the first series of conference play against Kentucky, we have done that. And oh, by the way, Texas A&M is really freaking good. That's the number one team in the country, one of the best lineups in all of college baseball. They just don't stop with that lineup. It's unbelievable. They hit for average, they hit for power, and we went and we took one. Now, it was tough, but we got one. And on top of that, we also got another midweek win over top five Clemson at home. It was a 15-inning barn burner. I don't know if it was a barn burner. It just went forever. We seem to have a habit. I had a 20-inning game. It was 2019 against Clemson. And it was so much fun, man. Like I had to get up at like 5:30 the next morning, but I couldn't leave. I had to watch the game, man. Like I couldn't leave and go to bed. It didn't matter. I had to watch that game. You had to go through that. It only makes sense. It's only worth it if we win, but we won. So it was all worth it. I didn't want to think about the mindset I would have been if we would have lost the game. But we won that game. It's a top five team, a top five RPI team. And you go on the road and you beat A&M, the number one team in the country, number one RPI team in the country. We go 2-2 this weekend, which I told you last week, that's what we had to do. We had to go 2-2. We went 2-2. That is a successful week for Georgia baseball. And that's exactly what we did. Again, we did what we had to do. Getting a series win over A&M would have been gravy. And hey, it could have happened. A Friday, like we were in the game for most of the game. We ended up blowing it late. Leighton Finley started on Friday. He opened the season as our Saturday starter, our second starter. And he was solid to start the season. He's really, really coming on. His fastball is touching 96 consistently, 97 at times, man. I mean, he was pitching late in that game. And he's about 100 pitches. He was still hitting 96 consistently. That guy is turning into a really, really good pitcher for us. Changeups really coming on. He's really, really been a big, big arm for us to start on Friday nights because Charlie Goldstein, who was our opening Friday starter, he was out about a month with what they were calling a dead arm. He's back now, but he's still not in a starting role. They're kind of working up his pitch count. He pitched some last week and he pitched some this week. He was fantastic for us since Clemson. So the pitching staff right now is actually why I'm excited about this team right now. I mean, the bats are the bats. We know what the offense is going to give us, but I think our pitching staff is rounding into shape. Okay, so Goldstein is back. I don't know if he's ready to start yet, but he's getting closer to that point. By the time the postseason rolls around, I think he will be there. And if that's the case, I think we are setting up to have actually a pretty, I don't know if I'm going to go as far as saying formidable staff, weekend starting staff, but better than what we had to open the season. Because if we get Goldstein back, that's our original Friday starter. He doesn't have overpowering stuff, but he's got really good stuff. He's not going to run up there 96, 97 miles an hour, but he's got some really good off-speed stuff. Low 90s fastball, good enough. He locates well. He doesn't walk a bunch of guys. And he's one of those guys out there that's just got the mentality you want on the mound. And he came in against Clemson and was lights out for us. Now, against Clemson, like, we knew how important that game was for NCAA tournament hopes, because we were not bringing in typical bullpen arms like that we would bring in the midweek. We were bringing in starters. We brought in Charlie Goldstein to close out that game. And it worked out. If it hadn't worked out that way, then it's like, hey, man, what are we doing? But hey, it worked out. We had to get that win. So great job there, Wes Johnson. But if we can get Goldstein back and you put him back Friday nights, I don't know if he puts back Friday nights, but let's say he slots back in on Fridays or one of those spots. And then you got Leighton Finley, who's been great for us. And here's the third guy. Colton Smith has been nothing short of a revelation for us over the past month. This guy started game two of the doubleheader, which is a game that we had to have. We lost the first two games of the doubleheader, or we lost the first two games of the series. We'll get to that in a minute here. But Colton Smith comes in game three, a game that I don't know if we had to have to get in the postseason, but really needed. Like, it would really put us in a really good position. And he comes out and pitches a game of his life, man. And he's been doing that. I feel like I've said that like 3 weeks in a row. Game of his life, outing of his life. Well, yet again, career high 11 strikeouts, threw over 100 pitches, went six innings, and was just fantastic. I give up one home run, but there was like a jet stream blown out all day on Saturday. I mean, the first game of the doubleheader was just bananas, man. He put the ball in the air. The ball was going out. It was crazy. But he pitched fantastic, man. Two earned runs. And that was, if you look at his numbers over the past couple of weeks, so I got 18 innings pitched for Colton Smith over the past month. Two earned runs over the last 18 innings. Go a little bit further than that, a little bit further back, five earned runs in his last 22 innings pitched. This is a guy who, coming into SEC plays, ERA after non-con, and like non-con, we didn't have a super tough non-conference schedule, guys. His ERA was in the double digits, okay? He has figured it out, man. And his fastball's consistently at 94, 95. He's locating it. But the biggest pitch for him, his out pitch right now, is a slider. It's unhittable. He's throwing it for strikes. They can't pick it up. They can't tell if it's a fastball. I mean, they can't hit it. And A&M, again, has one of the, if not arguably the best lineups in all of college baseball. They could not touch the guy. I mean, he was going after him and mowing them down. 11 Ks against the best lineup, one of the best lineups in all of college baseball. The best lineup he has faced all season long. And I've been telling you guys for a couple of weeks now that he was showing starter stuff. And I told you, I didn't know if he'd end up in the starting rotation at any point this season. But he was showing starter stuff. And yeah, Wes Johnson saw the same thing, because Colton Smith in the starting rotation, and thank God he was, because if he did not give us that outing, we don't win that game. We get swept, which is what we could not allow to happen. Let's go back, though, to Friday night. We were in that game most of the game. We brought the guys. I mean, Charlie Goldstein came in, got hit a little bit hard in that game. Leighton Finley gave us a great outing. A good enough outing for us to win that game. I think he gave up two earned runs, I want to say. Good enough for us to win that game. The bats didn't quite have it on Friday night. And that's, I mean, A&M's a really, really good baseball team. They're number one for a reason. Then you fast forward to game one of the doubleheader on Saturday. Oh, my God. I'm still frustrated about this. It's fine, because we got a game. We salvaged a game. But we could have that series, guys. We scored 9 runs in the top of the first inning. And you're like, oh, yeah, we got this game, baby. Well, not so fast. And I know it sounds crazy, but truthfully, I was sitting there watching that game and I was like, 9 runs, I don't know if that's enough. I told you guys before, there's no lead too big for us to overcome, because our bats are just that dynamic. There's also no lead that's too big for us to blow. Like, we will blow big leads, and we did in that game. So we scored 9 in the top of the first. They come back with 8 in the bottom of the first. So it's 9-8 after the first inning. Matthew Hossen, we threw a bullpen game. And that's also why I was worried. I was like, yeah, 9 runs, but we're throwing a bullpen game. And our bullpen, if you haven't noticed, guys, not good. Not good. Now, I knew we were going to probably throw some of our better arms out of the pen, but still, with the way that jet stream was blowing, the wind was just carrying the ball out, and they were just crushing the baseball, man. It was not so great. And look, we started Matthew Hoskins, who pitched for the second time in the last 12 months, coming off of Tommy John surgery. Did not record an out in the first inning. Wasn't bad, but we weren't wasting any time. So then you bring in the guy who has been fantastic for us out of the bullpen, and Brian Zeldin, the transfer from Penn, who has been the only guy really consistent that we can trust from the start of the season to now. He coming into this weekend, he had one bout outing all year. It was at Mississippi State. He got hit really hard in that game, got roughed up, and kind of lost that game. But hey, like, there are many games that we don't win without Brian Zeldin in the SEC. He's been fantastic for us. And he came in, and like, I will... Two things. Again, the jet stream, tough. Also, I don't know if you guys are watching this. The umpiring over the entire weekend, on Friday night, I thought it was terrible. Like, Finley, I thought he was going to murder the umpire. Like, I thought he was going to punch him in the face. I mean, you can see him, like, he would turn around and after he got the pitch back from the catcher, and he would just start cussing, just muttering to himself, walking off the mound after he strikes a guy out, you know, to end the inning, go to the dugout. He's just cussing up a storm because the umpire was ridiculous, man. He was not calling strikes. Just simply, like, you had to basically throw the ball down the middle of the plate for him to call a strike. And it was much the same thing. I think it was a different umpire, but same concept. So Zeldin was not, like, he's a off-speed heavy guy, right? He paints the corners. He's not an overpowering fastball guy. His fastball is high 80s, low 90s maybe, but he's like 60% off-speed, and his off-speed stuff is ridiculous. It's filthy. It's nasty. But he wasn't getting the calls, so he had to come over the plate a little bit more, and when he had to do that against A&M's team with the way the wind was blowing out, I mean, they were just crushing the ball. And so it is what it is, but they came back. They run rules in that game, and we did not score a run after the first inning. In fact, we did not score a run from the first inning of game one of the doubleheader to the seventh inning of game two of the doubleheader. We were down 2-0. Colton Smith, start of his life, gave us every chance we could to win that game, but we just could not hit the ball. I think we had one hit maybe going into the seventh inning, but the seventh inning was the inning we had to have. We had three homers that inning. Shortstop Colby Branch started off with a solo shot. Trey Phelps, who thank God came back from injury. Like, the weirdest thing ever, you guys might have seen this. Who was it? I think against Missouri? Might have been Mississippi State. A couple weeks ago, he was hitting, and he took a big swing, and he missed the ball, and like his knee buckled. I thought he tore his ACL. I was like, oh, he went down instantly, and it's like, oh, my God. And this guy's an awesome freshman, one of the best players on the team, one of the best hitters on the team. He's a freshman. He's unbelievably talented. And I was like, dang, that sucks. He's been out for a couple of weeks. He came back. He didn't play on Friday. He played on Saturday, and he hit that two-run shot in the top of the seventh, to give us a 3-2 lead. Charlie Connor comes up, and he hits another shot, another home run, third home run of the weekend, to give us a 5-2 lead. And thank God we held on. We held on. Rian Jarvis Evans, who's been good for us lately, didn't really have his best stuff. But it's Christian Maracnam, who opened the season as a starter for us, but before that, his entire career has basically been a guy out of the pen. We brought him out of the pen, and he came into a really tough situation, struck out six straight batters. Three guys, to get out of the seventh, struck out three more to get out of the eighth, and he went the rest of the way and won us that game. Now, he held us, like, it was tough, man. Like, we barely got out of there alive, 5-4, but we did what we had to do, and we got that win over the number one team, the number one RPI team in the country. But I might have buried the lead talking about baseball a second, but I definitely buried the lead talking about baseball because Charlie Condon was the story of the weekend like he has been, I don't know, all season long. He is going to win the Golden Spikes Award unless he just, like, I don't know. I don't know what would have to take. I mean, he had to go with like an 0-for-30 slump maybe to not win the Golden Spikes Award. I mean, there are other good hitters in the country, but Charlie is the best of the bunch. And he, in case you missed it, which I know if you listen to this podcast, you probably didn't, but let's reiterate it anyway. He broke two of Gordon Beckham's records. He broke his record for career home runs with his 54th home run, and he broke his single season record with his 29th home run. Amazing. Record-breaking stuff by Charlie Condon. But that doesn't really quite do justice to just how good Charlie Condon has been for us this year, all right? I got the numbers here. I want to read this. I want to make sure I get this right. So Gordon Beckham, 53 home runs was the Georgia career record coming into this season. He did that in 197 career games. Charlie Condon broke that record in 98 career games. He did not play a single game. He redshirted his freshman year. Last year was his first year playing baseball for the University of Georgia. He broke that record in less than half as many games as Gordon Beckham. I have no words. That's flat out, straight up absurd. That is absurdity. This is no hyperbole, guys. I've said this multiple times. I'm going to say it again. This is one of the, if not the greatest single seasons by a college baseball player in the history of college baseball. You can say I'm biased. You can call me a homer because I'm a Georgia guy. But the numbers speak for themselves, guys. This is an all-time great season in college baseball history by Charlie Condon. Not just Georgia baseball history, college baseball history. I've been trying to tell anyone who will listen all season, if you're not paying attention to Georgia baseball, you are missing out on one of the greatest athletes in the history of Georgia athletics at large. You are missing out. But it's not too late, guys. If you've been missing out, jump in on it. Charlie Condon is a sight to behold. He is must-see TV. Every at-bat is must-see TV. Because he's liable to hit one out of the park every single time he comes up. It's absolutely absurd. He is not only the Georgia record holder now in single-season home runs and career home runs, he is also leading the country still with 29 home runs. He leads the country with a .461 batting average. His OPS, oh my God, guys, this is out of control. His OPS is an absolutely staggering, mystifying 1.6. 1.6 OPS. And if you're not a baseball guy and you're like, what does that mean? Give me some reference. Okay, Babe Ruth. We know that name, right? Babe Ruth, even casual baseball fans know Babe Ruth. Well, Babe Ruth still today has the highest career OPS in Major League Baseball history. Well, that career OPS for Babe Ruth, 1.1. Charlie Condon is at 1.6 right now. I know it's college baseball. I know it's not major leagues. I understand that. But does that give you the idea of what we're talking about here with Charlie Condon? Does that give you the idea? This guy is, he's on Mount Rushmore of Georgia Athletics at this point. He's on Mount Rushmore of Georgia Athletics. I don't even know if you can really argue that. And think about this, guys. So for you guys who are about my age, 30s, we didn't see Herschel Walker. We know the legend of Herschel Walker. We've seen clips of Herschel Walker. We've seen him running over the Tennessee players, right? We've seen Bill Bates. Was that who it was? We've seen him running over these guys. I never saw a guy play a game live in my life. And I hate that, man. I would love to see who everyone agrees is the greatest Georgia player in the history of Georgia football. But the greatest Georgia player in my era, we just got done seeing play, Brock Bowers. We've had a bunch of great players, man. I've been fortunate to see a lot of great players. The Nick Chubbs of the world, the AJ Greens of the world, the Todd Gurley's of the world. We've seen a ton of them. I mean, Stetson Bennett, not the most talented, but great. I mean, he's up there as greatest, right? We've seen a ton of great players. Roquan Smith. We've seen all these players, man. Jordan Davis. Brock Bowers is that guy in my generation, right? So think about this, guys. Over the last 2 years, so 3 years of Brock, we got to witness Brock Bowers, I think, at the very least, one of the two greatest players in Georgia football history, two-time Mackey Award winner, only player to ever do that in college football history. Only. I would argue greatest tight end in college football history. And Charlie Condon, who is doing what he's doing, break-shattering records, putting together a season unlike any other that I have ever seen, that most people living have ever seen in college baseball. We've been lucky, guys. I mean, I know we missed Herschel, but we got this. I mean, this is truly, I mean, with both Brock Bowers and now with what Charlie Condon's doing right now on the diamond, this is tell your grandkids type stuff. Like, this is tell your grandkids about it type stuff. Like, just like my grandparents tell me about Herschel Walker. I remember that growing up. I mean, I don't have kids, not going to have kids, but if I did, I'd be telling them about Brock Bowers. I'd be telling them about Charlie Condon and what he's doing this season. It's just flat out ridiculous. It's unbelievable, man. Like, I think that, and I probably use that word a little too commonly. It's unbelievable. This is unbelievable. Like, what Charlie Condon is doing. 1.6 OPS? I mean, whew, absolutely unbelievable stuff, man. So, two GOATs, man. We were very fortunate. Charlie and Brock, two GOATs of my era. Just absolutely unbelievable. But back to this baseball team at large. Getting that win against A&M puts us at 10-11 in the SEC. We are in very good shape to go to the postseason. Like, we're, unless we just fall apart the last three series of conference play, which, hey, man, SEC's tough. It could happen. But barring a complete collapse, we're going to the tournament. The question now is, do we have a shot to host? If we want to host, which means we have to be one of the top 16 seeds, and don't so much pay attention to the rankings. I know we're number 20 in the rankings. That is irrelevant. There's a selection committee just like there is in football and basketball. They'll do the seeding, okay? Do they follow the rankings? No. I mean, the rankings are like D1 baseball. It's not even like an AP rating. Baseball is just a little bit different. But with our RPI, which coming into the weekend was at number 9, after A&M, we'll see, it'll be released on Monday. So we should still be top 10-ish, either inside the top 10 or fringe top 10 right there. With that RPI, and with our strength of schedule being a top 10 strength of schedule, the top 10, top 15 strength of schedule in the country, if we go 5-3, or if we go 5-4 over these next three series, right? So we got three series, two at home, one this week against Vandy. We're closing out the regular season at home against Florida, and we've got a road series in Columbia against South Carolina sandwiched between that. If we can go 5-4 and get to 15-15, I think we got a shot with our RPI and our strength of schedule. Now, to feel really good about hosting, if you want to remove all doubt, let's go 6-3. If we go 6-3 over the next three weekends in the SEC, I think we're hosting. I think that we are hosting. That's a tall task. Vanderbilt's a good team. They were top five for a lot of the season. They're now, I think they just actually lost a series to Mississippi State. Mississippi State came back late and won that game today. And so Vanderbilt, they've been scuffling a little bit. They're still a top 15 team in the country. It's still a really, really good baseball team. But if we can go 6-3, I think we host. If we can get to 15 overall, like even if we don't host, we're in, like, no doubt we're in at 15. If we get to 14 wins in conference, I'm pretty sure we're going to be in. 13 is where it gets kind of iffy. If we get to 15, history tells us we're 100% in the tournament, especially with our RPI. 14, but a 70% chance is what history tells us. 13 is where it gets a little iffy. I got some more numbers here that I'm going to read. So if we get to 13, that means we've got, go back to 1999, 35%, about 38%, 38.5% to be exact, of SEC teams have gotten the tournament at 13 wins. Now, a little bit more encouraging is the fact that since 2017, that number has gone up to about 50%, okay? So if we can get to 15 wins, we're in. 14, I'm almost certain we're in with our RPI. 13 will be iffy, but with our RPI, I think we still have a really, really good shot. I think this team is certainly within striking distance to be able to host a regional. I can't guarantee that. We got to go out and win some baseball games. 6 wins, we host regional. 5 is a shot depending on what happens around the country. But here's the thing. 2 of these 3 series are at home, right? We are 25-3 at home. 25-3 at home. If we hold serve, if we win both series at home, that's 4 wins right there. You win 1 on the road at Carolina. That gives you the 5 you need. So we have to hold serve at home and follow the same formula. Hold serve at home. Don't get swept on the road. If we can do that, we get to 15 wins. If we can somehow sweep either Vandy or Florida or win those 2 series, just get 2 out of 3 in those series, and then somehow win the road series at Carolina, which we have not done. We have not won a road series yet this season. But if we can find a way to do that, that gets us to 16 wins. And that's where it's like, okay, 16-14 with our RPI, we are in really, really good shape to be hosting a regional, which would be fantastic for this team. This team, with the way the pitching is coming on, I think we have a run in us. The bats have been nothing short of spectacular all year. We know that. The pitching, especially the bullpen, has been the problem. But with the emergence of guys like Colton Smith, I think you're starting to see a Georgia baseball team that can make more run. Like early in the season, you know, even as recent as like 3 or 4 weeks ago, I'm like, yeah, I think we're going to get in this late tournament, but I don't think we're going to make much of a run once we get there because our pitching just isn't there. Like, we just don't have the arms right now to really do anything once we get into the postseason. Now I'm starting to rethink that assessment. Because with Colton Smith emerging, now here's what I would do. If I am Wes Johnson, he is infinitely more intelligent than I am when it comes to college baseball. He knows far more than I do, right? But here's what I would do if I'm managing this team. Leighton Finley on Friday nights, Colton Smith on Saturdays, Charlie Goldstein, if we can get his count back up, put him back in on Sundays. Those are 3 guys I really trust, especially with how Finley and Smith are really coming on right now. Those should be our 3 starters if Charlie Goldstein can get his inning count back up and go 4 or 5 innings for us, right? And then who do we trust out of the pen? Which, that's been our problem. We know Brian Zeldin is, I don't know if I want to say stud, but like, he's been studly at times. He's been really, really good for us. Jarvis Evans has also shown the ability to have starter stuff at times, but I think Colton Smith right now has kind of elevated himself a step above Jarvis. But Jarvis out of the pen is like, I'm a long reliever. That's a really good guy to have back there. You can trust him more often than not in that spot. And Christian Ratner, the hero of Saturday's game 2, the doubleheader, getting him out of the pen, let's go. Because here's been our MO. We want a starter to go 5 or 6 innings. I don't know if we've had a starter go more than 5 or 6 innings all year. And then you bring in Brian Zeldin and have Brian Zeldin one of those nights go the rest of the game. Like, he pitched 120 pitches, by the way, guys, in game 1 of the doubleheader. He went I'm not even exaggerating. 120 pitches in that game. He can go the distance. I mean, hell, Brian Zeldin could start for us. We just like him coming out of the pen. If he can throw 120 pitches, he could do that. But we want him to go the last 4 or 5 innings. I think Jarvis Evans can be that kind of guy too. So if Colton Smith, to say on a Saturday, gives you 5 or 6 innings, then you have Jarvis come in and pitch the last 3 or 4 and close that game out. Same thing with Christian Moratna. Was starting for us. Goldstein could start potentially on Sundays. And you get Moratna come in, close the game out. Those are 3 guys I really trust. Now, outside of that, I don't know who I really trust with that pin. There are some guys I do think that are showing me a little something. Matthew Hoskins, I know, hasn't pitched a ton, 2 innings, but I think he's got some stuff. And I think he's a guy that relatively speaking to the rest of our pin, I think I trust Matthew Hoskins. I think he's going to be a really good pitcher for us. Chandler Marsh, where have you been? basically MIA for the better part of a month, comes in late against Clemson and was instrumental in us winning that game. Like, lights out against Clemson, a very good lineup that Clemson has as well. He was good for us. You know, it wasn't as good last year, but 2 years ago, was really good for us. Looks like he might be a guy that can really help us down the stretch. Zach Harris is a guy. I like him coming out of the pen. He's doing some midweek stuff for us, but I think he could be a really good arm for us out of the pen on the weekends. And maybe to a slightly lesser degree, DJ Ratke at times, I think has been pretty solid. Here's who I do not want to see. No offense. Josh Roberge, I do not want to see him anymore. Patty Sack, no more. They just get crushed, man. Like, I just know that those guys are not good enough to come in and win SEC games. They just get crushed every time they come in. If we can avoid it, no more. Now, if we have like a 12-run lead and you want to save some of these arms so you can stack them up in maybe the next game, fine. But if it's a tight game, do not bring those guys in. They will give up the lead, okay? It's going to happen. Just trust me on that. So I think the staff is starting, the pitcher's clearing up for the staff a little bit. And that has me encouraged, not just for the rest of the regular season, but what we can maybe potentially do in the postseason. I think we potentially have a run in this. Now, as far as the lineup goes, getting healthy has been important for us. Getting a guy like Trey Phillips back has been big for us. So here's what I would like to see. My perfect Georgia lineup, my ideal Georgia lineup the rest of the way. Charlie Cunningham at third base, Colby Branch at shortstop, Slade Alford at second. I know Slade Alford is not as good of a defense second baseman as a guy like Sebastian Morillo, maybe even Trey King, but his bat is just significantly better. He's got to be in the lineup. Corey Collins at first, Fernando Gonzalez, catcher. Clayton Chadwick, by the way, about three or four different web gyms, like ridiculous stuff in center field. He was not even our opening day center fielder. It was Dylan Carter, who's been out for about 4 or 5 weeks with an injury. But Chadwick has been awesome out there. So definitely him in center field. Trey Phelps in left field. Paul Tate's in right field. And let's go Logan Jordan coming off the bench as the DH. That's the lineup. And I know Wes Johnson likes to give guys opportunities. He likes to switch up the starting lineup a little bit. There's core guys that are going to be in the lineup every single game, like Condon and Alford and Collins, Branch. Those guys are going to be in the lineup every single game. But it's crunch time, baby. We have a shot to host a regional. We have a shot. Now, we got to go out and win baseball games. So it can't be any like, feel good, hey, this guy works hard and we want to get him some reps. No, I'm sorry. We've done that. The time for that is past. We have got to have the guys out there that are going to win us games. Like Josh Stinson, I know he's been a great guy for this program. Could have left, did not. And I appreciate the guy. He cannot start a game on the road against number one A&M. What? Was this his third start of the year? We're starting him against A&M on the road? In a series, like, we cannot get swept? Like, what are we doing? And Wes Johnson's awesome. I am so high on Wes Johnson. Think he's fantastic. But that kind of stuff can't happen. Like, Josh Stinson can't be starting. Sebastian Morillo, good defensive second baseman, he's a liability at the plate. Trey King, also, maybe a little bit of a lesser degree, a liability at the plate at times. We need to have our best hitters in the lineup. Because like our pitching, like, it's getting better, but still not the strength of the team. Our team ERA is still like 6, okay? It's not like we have world beaters coming out of the pen, even our starting rotation. They're getting better. The pitcher's clearing up, but we're still not going to be great pitching the baseball. Like, that's not going to be the strength of this team. The strength of this team is always going to be our bats. So we need to lean into that and have guys in the lineup consistently that can actually hit the baseball. Trey Phelps has to play every game. His bat has got to be in the lineup every single game now that he is healthy. He's just got to play. It's that simple. So if we can follow that recipe from a pitching standpoint, from a lineup standpoint, I think we got a shot to go 6-3 down the stretch and host a regional. Now, the little caveat here, we got one more midweek game on the road at Kennesaw State, who's actually a good team. They're not great, but they're a good team. We cannot drop that game. If you want to host a regional, can't be dropping that game. They were a top 30 RPI team earlier in the year when we played them the first time around. We won that game. They've dropped. They're always going to drop in the RPI because their conference is terrible, right? So strength schedule will go down, RPI will drop. So like in the 60, 61 right now, something like that. So it's not as big of an RPI boon for us if we win that game. If we lose it, not great. We cannot lose that game. Win that game, go at least 5-4, hopefully 6-3, and we're in business. We're in business to potentially host a regional. So I'm very excited about this baseball team, guys. It's been a lot of fun. So if you haven't been watching, now's the time. It's not too late. 3 series left, 2 of them at home. Come on out to Foley Field. We're back at home against Vandy this weekend. It's going to be a ton of fun. The weather's going to be fantastic. I can't wait for it. I hope to see some of you guys out there as well. All right, moving on a little bit here. Let's talk about a sport that we don't really ever talk much here on the Glory J podcast because it's not something that I think most of our listener base really wants to hear me talk all that much about, but we had some big news on the Georgia gymnastics front. Josh Brooks made a very difficult decision. He had to, guys. It was the only decision that he could make. He had made this decision, but he made the decision to move on from Courtney Capetz-Carter, which is a very bittersweet thing. I will admit that. I have extraordinarily fond memories of Courtney when she was Courtney Capetz back when I was in school at Georgia. That was the same time that she was in school. I remember going to all the gym dog meets. That's when we were winning 5 straight national titles. And she is like, talk about Charlie Condon and Brock Bowers being like on the Mount Rushmore of Georgia athletics. Like, Courtney Capetz has a very strong argument to be up there as well. Like, absolutely. One of the all-time greats in a blue blood college gymnastics program. So I hate that it has come to this, that it had to come to this, but that's where we found ourselves. And we had to make this decision. 7 years, guys. It wasn't like we gave her 2 or 3 or 4 years. We gave her 7 seasons. 7 seasons. And in those 7 seasons, guys, she went 38-60 overall. Now, I know college gymnastics is different than football and baseball and basketball in terms of like your record. And I know that. But 38-60 is not getting it done in 7 years. We finished in last place in the SEC tournament each of the last 3 seasons. We're just not even making the NCAA tournament now, guys. Georgia gymnastics. 10-time national champion, Georgia gymnastics. Not even making the NCAA tournament now. It was the only decision that could be made. It had to happen. And I hate it. I hate it. I desperately wanted to work out with Courtney Capetz-Carter because, again, she gave me a lot of really fond memories, man, and I hate to see this happen to one of our own. This is the risk you run when you hire one of your own. Now, it's great in a lot of ways because you can say, hey, I love this program. It's great to sell in recruiting because you're all in. We've seen it with Kirby Smart, right? But as you know, guys like Kirby Smart, it works out sometimes, but oftentimes it doesn't. And when you got to move on from somebody who's an alumnus of your university, and not just an alumnus, but an all-time great player, athlete, I should say, as my wife always often tell me, gymnasts are not players. They are athletes. They are gymnasts. I get that wrong. I'm an idiot. But one of the all-time great Georgia athletes in the history of our program, of our athletic department. Just unbelievable. So when you got to move on from an athlete like that, and a gymnastics icon, that's tough. It's a very tough decision. But again, it was a decision that had to be made with the results. The results said this had to be made. This decision had to be made. And I'm also this, I mean, 1 season over .500, guys. 1 season over .500 in 7 years. It's just, it had to be done. Now, in her defense, and this is what people would use to argue against removing her from her head coaching job, she just put together the number one recruiting class in the country. Lily Smith, one of the best gymnasts that we've had in a long time. She's a true freshman. Do we want to give her time to see that out? And I can listen to that argument, but also 7 years is 7 years, man. 7 years to seven. And Haley DeYoung, who is one of the best gymnasts on the roster, she also missed the entire year with an injury. So there's some bad injury luck, but it wasn't just this year. I know there's some bad injury luck this year. I get that. And I'm not trying to pile on Courtney Capetz-Carter here. I don't want to do that. But it's beyond just this year, man. Like, there were 6 years before this, and it's just, I mean, 38-60 in 7 years, guys. It's just not good enough. It's just not good enough. So, unfortunately, we had to move on from her, but this is actually, in my opinion, a good day for Georgia gymnastics. And I think we're going to get back to where we were, because the hire that we made is nothing short of awesome. I know it kind of opens some eyes. Like, we have two head coaches? Yes, we have two co-head coaches, which I know is not what you see in other sports, but gymnastics is a little bit different. So the headliner here is, I'm going to butcher her last name. I apologize. I can say her first name, Cecile. Kenkwatu? Landy? We're going to go with that. We're going to call her Cecile, because that's when you look up her name and you kind of research her. I'll be honest with you guys, I had no idea who this woman was until I saw that we hired her. And so what did a George guy like myself do when I saw this? Well, I go and look her up and see, who is this woman we just hired? And what I figured out really quickly is Josh Brooks just went and hit an absolute grand slam, because this is a woman, universally, what I kept seeing over and over again from people who know the gymnastics world is they were stunned that we were able to get her to come to college gymnastics, to NCAA, because this woman has not been in college gymnastics. She's been doing professional stuff. In fact, she has been the personal coach for Simone Biles, all right? She has coached 2 gold medal winners personally. This woman apparently is an absolute home run hire. She is a former Olympian herself. From all accounts, I don't pretend to be a college gymnastics nut. I pay attention. My wife's big in college gymnastics. She was a big gymnast back in her day. Very good college, not college. Her knees got messed up, so she couldn't do college gymnastics, but she was a great gymnast back in her day. And so we pay attention to it. I watch it. I watch Friday Night Heights on SEC Network. I actually get into it, man. It's pretty fun. Pretty good stuff. I learn. I'm still learning, but I don't know all the names in college gymnastics like I do in baseball and basketball and football, right? But looking her up, it seems like this is almost like a can't miss. As close of a can't miss hire as you're going to get, like as good of a hire as Josh Brooks could have made. The only critique you could make is that, well, she has not been involved in college gymnastics. How is she going to be able to run a program? How is she going to be able to recruit? She doesn't know how to do that. She hasn't done these things. Well, first I would say, well, her resume speaks for herself. That's part of it. But that's where the co-head coach comes in. Ryan Roberts is a promotion from within our program. He has been an assistant under Courtney Carter-Capetz, and he is one of the big reasons behind all these great recruiting classes, especially the number one recruiting class that we put together. He is known as an ace recruiter behind the scenes. So you promote him to help with the recruiting aspect of things and the running the program aspect of things. And also like a gymnast like Lily Smith, who's really, really good, who you want to keep on your roster. You promote from within a guy who was instrumental in bringing her to Athens. That also helps the probability of us being able to keep her on our roster and have her not hit the transfer portal. So just an absolute home run, it seems like, by Josh Brooks. So I'm very excited about what Georgia gymnastics can do. Again, I watch as much as I possibly can. I haven't been to a meet in a while, but that might actually change. That might actually change here. But it's great to see our gymnastics programs. I feel like for a while we were just like punting on gymnastics, which was very disheartening considering what we are in the world of college gymnastics, what we always have been. Because we are in gymnastics, we are as blue of a blood as you get in college athletics. 10 national titles. And we haven't been close to that, guys. So now it looks like we're taking gymnastics seriously again. And that's a wonderful thing to see for a Georgia guy like myself. A couple of things here real quick. Georgia softball dropped another series at home against Florida. 2 out of 3 to the Gators. Look like we were going to win this series. We were up going into the 7th inning. The top of the 7th, Florida scores 7 runs. We were up, I think, 7-4 or 7-3 going into the top of the 7th. And Florida scores 7 runs. We ended up losing that series. That means we now lost 4 of the last 5 series. This is a team that was looking like we were going to be in line to be a national seed, host a regional, host a super regional. I think we have a shot to still host a regional if we finish strong and we play well in the SEC tournament. Super regional, I don't know if we're going to be a top 8 seed. I don't think so anymore unless we just finish with a flurry, which I don't know, man. Right now, man, it's tough. Like, for a while, it was our bats were actually pretty solid this weekend with the exception. We got run ruled on Friday. We still don't have the elite arms. Now, I mean, Madison Kupik's one of our pitchers. She was out. She's been out for a little while. She wasn't pitching this weekend, so that hurts. So that certainly put a dent in our ability to get the Florida Gators out. Florida is really good offensively. I watched 2 of the games. I didn't watch the game on Friday. I watched games on Saturday and Sunday. Florida leads the SEC in most offensive categories. The only category they do not is home runs. That's where we lead. Our bats have been kind of quiet over the past couple of weeks, losing a lot of those series. They woke up this weekend, but the pitching just could not quite get done. So we have been in a little bit of a drought here over the past month in Georgia softball. So it's time to get back on track. We have one more series in the regular season. Then the SEC tournament starts. And we got to get hot if we want to even try to get remotely back in the conversation to be a national seed, which I think that's slipping further and further away by the day. In fact, I think it's highly unlikely at this point. But we should at this point want to hold on to being able to host a regional. That's what we need to be doing. Be a top 16 seed. So I don't know. We got to finish strong there. It's not been a good look for the past month for a team that just looked like it was absolute machine early in the season. So that's a little Georgia softball talk for you here. And last thing, I want to wrap up today with a little Georgia basketball talk. We have more clarity on what this roster is going to look like next season. Obviously, it's just absolute chaos in the college basketball world right now. Every team is just being devastated by the portal. Guys leaving, guys coming. It's just so hard to keep track of, man. Every day, new guys entering the portal, new guys committing. It's wild, wild stuff. But we added 2 players from the transfer portal over the past week. The most recent one coming yesterday on Saturday, Dakota LaFeu, a 6'5 guard from Mount St. Mary's. If Mount St. Mary sounds familiar, that's because this is the second player that we have added from Mount St. Mary's this offseason. Deshane Montgomery was the first guy that we added. So this is a team we played Mount St. Mary's last year. I was actually at that game, and both those guys were awesome in that game. I remember watching, I was like, dude, these guys might beat us. Those dudes were just on fire against us, both LaFeu and Montgomery. But LaFeu was the leading scorer for Mount St. Mary's last year, so he seems to be the bigger get. Montgomery came off the bench most of last year, kind of a 6-man, but he was a really dynamic athlete. But LaFeu averaged 17.5 points last year, basically 4 assists a game and 4 rebounds a game. Looks like this is a good get for us. I mean, I saw the guy play 1 game. I'm not gonna. I watched him play more than that. I saw him play us. He was a really good shooter. He's a guy that can get to the rim. Good athlete, 6'5", good length, kind of skinny, about 185, 190 pounds. But this is a guy absolutely is going to upgrade our offense this year, upgrade our shooting, which is something that we need to do. And like I know it's Mount St. Mary's, but we just went and got the two leading scorers from Mount St. Mary's. So those are two guys that we got from the transfer portal. Then we also got Justin Abson from Appalachian State, who's not an offensive guy. He averaged almost 8 points a game last year. Not great, but that's not why you bring in Justin Abson. This guy is a defensive specialist. Averaged 2.8 blocks per game last year, guys. 2.8 blocks, 7.1 rebounds. Think about the two biggest issues we had last year. Defense, rebounding. This guy helps you fix that. This is the kind of guy that we needed to bring in. Now, when you look at his measurable, it's like, well, he's not that big. 6'9". That's big enough, but that's not your typical like 5, right? Only 6'9". But this guy is a shot blocker extraordinaire, really physical rebounder. I mean, guys, we averaged 3.3 blocks per game as a team last year. He averaged 2.8 blocks on his own last year. He was the Sun Belt Defensive Player of the Year, fifth in the entire country in blocks last year. So 6'9 or not, again, I'm not going to pretend I watched this guy play at all last year. I didn't see Appalachian State games. But this guy, the numbers speak for themselves. He is exactly what we need. I told you guys what we need to do. We need to go out there and get some guys that can fill it up from distance and be legit scorers for us from the perimeter. We got two of those guys from Mount St. Mary's. And we needed a shot-blocking rim runner athlete at the five. And that is what Justin Abson is. If you pair him along with the guys that we've got coming back from the freshman class last year, it was a really, really good class. And also Asa Newell, five-star big-time player coming in because he's going to play the four for us and stretch the court a little bit. And also rebound, block shots, all that big-time athlete. You pair him with Asa Newell at the four, all of a sudden Georgia defensively has gotten a lot better. A lot better. So I think it was a really good week for Georgia. I know those are not big-time names from big-time programs that are going to make you open your eyes, but think about what we needed. We needed guys that can hit shots from the perimeter. We got two of those guys. We need a guy that can rebound and a guy that can block shots and rim run. And that's what we got in Justin Abson. So I don't care if they're big names. I care that we got the kind of guys that we needed, and that's exactly what we did. And we went and got the best players off of good, solid teams. Appalachian State didn't make the tournament last year. It was a good, solid basketball team. Mount St. Mary's, you know, I mean, they weren't great, but you take their two best players, guys that are bona fide scorers, which is what we need to go along, guys like Blue Kane and obviously Silas Dimery coming back. I think we've done a really good job so far in the transfer report. Now, the one negative, the one downside from last week from the basketball standpoint was RJ Melendez finally entering the portal. I was holding out hope maybe he would stick around. I thought he would enter the portal day one with the way he was yo-yoed with his minutes back and forth in and out of the lineup, and just baffling to me how this guy did not play more. He's our best on-ball defender, our best rebounder, our most athletic guy out there, run the court, and just couldn't consistently on the court. It had to be something behind the scenes that we didn't know about. Otherwise, there's just no logical explanation. But when he didn't enter the portal right away, a week goes by, 2 weeks go by, doesn't enter the portal. It's like, well, maybe he's sticking around. But no. Too good to be true. He has entered the portal. He is gone. So we got a couple more spots to fill. We are certainly not done in the transfer portal. But so far, these three guys that we have added to the basketball roster, I think are going to be really, really strong additions. I think we're going to have a chance to not just be better next year. You guys know I think we're going to go to the NCAA tournament. I think that we absolutely are. If we continue to add the right kind of guys to the portal, with the guys that we have returned, the guys we're adding from the high school ranks, well, the guy we're adding from the high school ranks in Asa Newell, I like what this roster is going to be able to do next year. I like how it's shaping up. So big-time stuff on the basketball front as well. But all right, guys, that's all I got for today. That is a full-on recap of the week that was in Georgia Athletics. I think that's about as comprehensive a recap as you're going to find anywhere out there. At least that was the goal. I may or may not have hit that goal, but I gave it my best shot. But I appreciate you guys being here, starting your week off with me here on the Glory UGA podcast. But I am just getting started this week. I'm going to have a ton more great Georgia sports content for you guys, including the long-awaited, the elusive listener mailbag episode, which I promise you, is happening with our next episode. Thank you for your patience, but it is happening. It's happening. But thanks, guys. Appreciate you. Have a great week. And as always, go Dawgs!